the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Pratipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in the soul of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy, blessed day, O happy, blessed place, O happy, blessed time, O happy, blessed path, O happy, blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
We are here to do the suffering.
If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over any suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Before we start, it occurs to me to ask if anyone's wondering about the windows.
I was wondering.
So we have them covered with sheets because, or drop cloths, because birds were flying into them, and the strips and the little chitinga things that we did have on there wasn't really doing the trick. They were still flying into them. And I don't know what those berries are that they eat. What are those called? That makes them kind of loopy, and that's what was causing it. So I think we're trimming and seeing what we can do about that. But in the meantime, having the windows covered seems to save the birds' lives. So that's what we do. So what would you like to look at? Yes, thank you.
Well, it feels like I just had a little insight into something that I've been looking at just now when I stop coughing and have this tickle in my throat. Because I've been looking at, I was looking at it around the email class, the most recent one, and for some reason, this particular class, every time I try and rephrase it or try and talk about what it's pointing at, I get this kind of haze that goes over it, and there's something about it that I've been having trouble focusing on. Even what I remember about it, that I was choosing something that's a challenge, that's difficult, and something, and then I get stuck.
Yeah.
So I would.
So there is the thing.
Yeah. So I've been looking at that a lot, and chose something that's really my biggest karmic challenge. Which is probably why the stupid dust arrives.
Yeah, why it's hazy.
And I was putting it together with something we were talking about on Tuesday night of you have to really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about, you know, that if we set an intention for something, it's amazing how it works, but we have to really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been looking at that in the context of it too, and seeing that in this particular karmic ball of wax that is just almost seems intractable, that I think there has been a not really meaning it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the stupid dust has come in around the email class. It's like, okay, I've chosen the biggest thing. I'm going to what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Sort of like there is it feel like there's the intention to do it, but there's not the oomph that's really required to get the clarity to really, I don't know.
Yeah, there's not, you know, it's we're also talking this week in the group about the worthy opponent, and as on the way down here I was looking at how I think around certain really, really real contents, the worthy opponent becomes so worthy out there that the worthy opponent in here doesn't show up. You know, it's like the worthy opponent doesn't get a match.
Meaning that they're really, it feels so much like the worthy opponent is real and out there and strong.
Yeah.
That there's not that, you can't access the matching strength
exactly.
in yourself.
It's like there's someone who kind of accedes to it, kind of goes, well, yeah, that's, you know, that is so much of a worthy opponent mm-hmm. that I, you know, I don't know how I could possibly, I mean, I don't really say it in those words,
yeah.
I don't really hear it that way, but I think there's a way in which someone doesn't really get that it takes that much to come up against
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And so to go back to where I started, so I was just seeing in a little way, so I'm sitting here and all of a sudden I know there's this tickle in my throat and I'm trying really hard to not have to do anything about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then it just becomes, you know, a reflex and I cough and then there begins the stories about, well, you know, that's not, you shouldn't be doing that,
yeah.
you know, and just having the willingness to stay there and say, well, that's irrelevant.
Yeah.
I'm doing that and so can't seem to stop it at the moment, but what I'm doing is being present and I'm being here, and so that conversation is irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah. So with the cough and the tickle, it was that willingness to be so present to what's actually happening. You just don't have time for the story. You're not going to listen, indulge in any way the story, and you're going to deal with it, whatever it takes,
yeah.
whatever seems to be called for
right.
in that moment.
Yeah, I'm just going to stay here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to stay here. And I think that's what doesn't happen when that really real content comes up. You know, it's like it might start out to, okay, there it is, I'm just going to stay here, and then it gears up and it gears up,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, okay, well, maybe later,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, so in this today, there was a willingness to stay here. Sometimes with the really real karma, it feels like sort of an acquiescence
mm-hmm.
to, oh, I just
yeah.
can't, okay, let
yeah.
me do it another time.
Yeah.
And it just hasn't built, you know, I don't know how these things work, obviously, but it's like if the momentum is just not built yet,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you know, it's just
yeah.
not, you know,
yeah.
the time or whatever to be there, or if there's something that's preventing that
yeah.
energy from being there to see
yeah.
through that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I was also hearing it in the end recitation. You know, if I'm suffering, it's because I'm choosing something instead of ending suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought in those, you know, in those moments, someone chooses not to do what it takes to end that suffering, and I'm not conscious of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not aware that that's what's happening, but it feels like that's really what's happening. It's
mm-hmm.
like, okay, here I'm here I'm showing up. I'm ending suffering. Here I'm showing up. I'm ending suffering.
Not so much here,
even though it's the biggest cause of my suffering. Really, I mean,
yeah.
it's that one turn of the screw that just
yeah.
sends me down the tubes every time, and it's like, what?
Yeah. Well, you know, what's occurring to me is that it's since it is the deepest or a very deep karmic thing, you know, the tools that you or the edge, that's where the edge
yeah,
is,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and that can be really good information
yeah.
that we have,
yeah.
that okay, here's what seems to be able to be handled, this one not yet, here it is.
Yeah.
And you know, in the same way, like if we were using something, a tool that
mm-hmm.
works in soft ground, then it works in a little harder ground, when you get
yeah.
to, you got to get a jackhammer,
yeah.
and I don't
yeah.
have a jackhammer, so how do we get a jackhammer, and how do we get, you know,
yeah.
How do we prepare
right.
to really get there?
Yeah, exactly. That's you know, so that's really a good place to look at, you know, what tools do I need
mm-hmm.
that I haven't used yet on this, you know, what
mm-hmm.
what's called for here that hasn't shown up yet or hasn't occurred or hasn't had the willingness to step up with.
Yeah. And you know, just like the question and the answer sort of arise together, maybe asking the question is what will bring the thing,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a neat clarity that you're experiencing that there is something I don't yet see or have access to or willing something that is called for, that I'm, you know, it sounds like a real openness to receiving.
Yeah, and I really think that what on the way down here, what I saw was that there is not the showing up in here to match the strength of what's showing up out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, to me, that feels really helpful because then when that shows up, I can look for and see, well, where can I find that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe talking to the mentor about how can we create a team that can show up in this situation.
So recognizing the strength of that worthy opponent can really help you find that, access that, build it, if whatever that verb would be, in yourself, so that you can match it, meet it.
Yeah. It was funny in group on, I think it was Thursday night, when I was talking about having, it was one of those moments when I fell into one of those really, I'm taken over by this thing, and the person guiding asked whether I had, you know, thought to record and listen during that, and I said, it didn't even occur to me, and it was suggested that, you know, like taping the recorder to my toothbrush.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't tape my recorder to my toothbrush, but it's funny how many times that image of my recorder being taped to my toothbrush has come up since then. You know, it's like, it does come up when I go, oh yeah, I could record it.
Yeah.
And I see it taped to my toothbrush.
Yeah, in your mind's eye.
Even though it's not actually there.
Yeah. And is it helping you get to that
recorder?
Yeah, quarter?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Ashley?
So I've been looking at a version of that process too.
Mm-hmm.
And reading a lot of the Dhammapada lately, and the passage that I've been looking at really points to a clue, which I haven't worked out, so I thought I would put it out there. And the passage is about vigilance, and related to not finding fault with others or the self. And I have a workshop coming up ahead of me because I'm going to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain level of trepidation, but also a level of anticipation. And a small measure of that happened yesterday when I talked to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I could feel the trigger happening. Just waves of it just showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, not in the big thing. She said something about how your visit's going to be really short. And it was like, well, if I could have done it. You know, it's like she was expressing, I wish I could spend so much more time with you.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't the response. Mm-hmm. It was an immediate defense against, well, at least I'm coming, right? And so I was looking, I was really paying attention to what that trigger is. And part of the book I'm reading, the Ignatieshvaran says, you know, relationships are there to mirror what you have to see.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that it's such a gift to be able to have those relationships in one's life that are actually going to point at what one has to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And the process of identification is is what I'm getting to see so much, because there's so much material to reveal places of unconsciousness.
Yeah.
And that Rumi quote that if you don't like the rub, how will that mirror ever get polished? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I have to be open to that process of being rubbed. And the only place that I can come from in accepting that is to remind myself that that which is rubbing is doing it out of love. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's so difficult to hold on to that in those moments of being so triggered.
Yeah. Yeah, because if there's a certain amount of letting go that is that's an option in yes. those moments. And all of those things that you're saying can be a help, reminder, support for that. Okay, the rubbing is really life loving me, and that this is what I signed up for. This is my practice. This is what I'm doing. There's no fault. Nobody's at fault. It's all for my good. All of that can really assist us in the letting go.
Uh huh. Yeah. And what I was also looking at in the Dhammapada, and the Buddha talks about it so clearly, is that when we get on the path, the challenges become bigger, mm-hmm. right? It's not like I'm ever going to be completely successful in fighting the samskaras. It's the magnitude of what I am going to have to confront mm-hmm. in order to transcend is just going to get upped.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
And it's truly a battlefield.
Yeah.
And there's that place of, well, it has to be loving. Well, actually it is. It's just not the loving that current conditioning would yeah. indicate. That why would it be a battlefield? Uh-huh. Why would it be a trial by fire? But it is, and there's something glorious about that.
Yes, yes. Well, and so when you're in that identity, is it is that what can that image and that mission, if you will, is that what you can turn to?
Well, I've not been, you know, it's been, I think, as Mickey was pointing out, there are certain places in which the karma has been transcended, mm-hmm. and so they're not charged. Mm-hmm. And I recognize now that it's useful, because the training of redirecting the attention and of staying in awareness, of not caring what it feels like, mm-hmm. are all preparation for this place that I have to look at.
Yeah.
It's much more subtle, and it's much more charged.
Yeah.
And to me, my current experiences, it's all helpful in the leading up to it, and it's a lot more helpful in the recovery,
uh-huh.
because there's a way to talk myself out of the ego place,
yeah.
right? Because it's love, the mirror, Rumi poetry,
right.
Dhammapada, all of that describe the process and allow for the acknowledgement the stakes of the game.
Yes, yes.
Right? And that's not easy.
Yeah.
This isn't something that is for the weak heart.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so the thing that I just just dropped in when I saw that is part of the issue, part of the place of this trigger is the unconscious orientation that is being maintained. In other words, what I haven't caught on to are all of those places where there's an ego orientation that is just simply an orientation.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a process. It's not the fact that ego is present there means that the response would be an identification.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's no conscious identity. There's no conversation. I'm just there. That identity is there.
Uh-huh.
Or that simple fact of the process of suffering is there.
Yeah.
It's not the process of connection. Because if it was, then I wouldn't get triggered.
Right. Yes, yes. And thank goodness that the relationship is there, as you said in the first quote, to bring that to show you where those places are.
That's right.
Those places where that orientation still is present, mm-hmm. that unconscious orientation.
And the absurdity of it is that it's so small. The trigger is so small, mm-hmm. but the charge is so much. Mm-hmm. The thing that I take comfort from, I guess, is that life has never let me down. Mm-hmm. In the sense of having that this is what I have to face, mm-hmm. and that there will be an adequate process of working through it, which will be on a timetable that I don't have any control over.
Yeah. You can trust the process. Life has never let you down. So not only will the timing be perfect, the tools or the whatever you need to see will be there, that everything will be adequate for you to meet this. Mm-hmm. And because it is your, that is what you are. I mean, that's your intention. That's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's what you're up for.
Mm-hmm. And for the first time in the years that I've been practicing, that I actually feel a sense of, and not even, it's almost like, okay, I'm ready for this. Mm-hmm. Bring it on,
bring
kind
it
of
up.
Thing.
Uh-huh.
I know I'm going to get horribly triggered. I know that I'm going to get to all the places of identification that I don't particularly want to get into. But, oh boy,
yeah.
Will I see it?
Yeah. And so all of those things being triggered and going to all those places and feeling that huge charge and even seeing the absurdity, all of that is no problem. It doesn't, you know, I don't know if you would put the language, this doesn't, you're not afraid of it. It's like, bring it on, you know.
Yeah.
You're ready for it.
And perhaps for the first time, it could be improv in the sense of, you know, I don't have, I don't think it'll be fun.
Yeah.
But at least I can bring a sense of humor to the process.
Yeah, and you never know.
I don't know. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's the thing about improv.
Yeah, I never knew.
Yeah.
It's the other, one last thing I would say is, you know, part of the place where I get triggered is that all of the relationships that I thought were the deepest in my life are now getting to be very impersonal.
Uh-huh.
I don't like people.
Uh-huh.
I don't, you know, I prefer not to spend time with them.
Uh-huh.
And so there's that place of, oh my God, the family that I have here, the community that I work and participate in, so much more dear to me,
uh-huh.
on a personal level,
yeah.
than that family back there.
Yeah.
And that is such a ripe place for ego to take hold in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, and work it. And get triggered, and it's like, I don't really want, and you know, it's just interesting to watch.
Yeah, very interesting to see all of that happen, and keeping that, you know, keeping that perspective of, we just don't know.
Yeah.
What that will be, you're seeing this, you're seeing all of these personal relationships becoming impersonal, you're seeing these relationships become so dear, what is, you know, and just kind of holding that all. As improv.
Yeah. And what Rob really said that, right? Because it's like, compassion doesn't mean, compassion means acceptance, but it doesn't mean not disliking, right? There's a dualistic like and dislike, but there are preferences that one can have without judgment.
Yeah.
And to walk that edge is an interesting one, too.
Yes, yes. To walk that edge.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
June. I've been looking at something with vocabulary, which is keeping commitments. And there has been some a little clarity around it, I think, from kind of in a direction I never thought would. But one of the email class responses, the person was talking about, it was a light room, dark room thing, and they were talking about an experience that I had a bazillion times, and that I think all of us have. I've certainly heard a lot of you talking about it, mm-hmm. which is being aware that you're about to go down to choose karma from the presence, and choosing the karma and knowing that you are.
Yeah.
So it's that. And Sherry called it the gray room.
Yeah.
And then what she said is, there's no such thing as the gray room. The gray room is the dark room.
Uh-huh.
And boy, did I get it. And I can't tell you how that's helping with the keeping commitments thing, but it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, well, I guess I can come and tell you, because in not keeping commitments, there's always an awareness, not keeping commitment. Here I go. Mm-hmm. I committed to X and I'm not doing it. Well, that's just dark room.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no, it's just pure dark room.
Yeah.
Don't even try to rationalize it yeah. into anything else.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I just wanted to share that.
Yes.
So fun.
That that clarity, because what can, it sounds like what can happen, or at least my experience anyway, is that sort of mitigating, kind of rationalizing, it's just gray.
When I practice a little bit more, I won't be in this
place. Yeah, yeah.
Or there's something, one day I'll be a person who keeps her commitment.
Yeah.
I'll practice enough and I'll become that person.
Yes.
And then I'll be the right person.
Oh, gosh.
And, I'll be a worthy Zen student.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I saw in working with my Zen awareness coach is that so much of that whole thing is just the structure built around the duality of success and failure.
Yeah.
And she helped me just see it's, you know, that's, let's see, it's just a structure.
Yeah.
It's just a framework that all of this rests on, and it's all false.
Yeah.
Just drop the whole structure.
Yeah, that you can just, that's really, and what you got from that, the insight from that email class response is, what maybe didn't feel like the structure, it is the structure, and you saw it, and it's just as much in the dark room as if you were under the structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something very liberating about that, you know, it seems to speak a little bit too to what was pointed out earlier about meaning it, you know, and meeting that that the conditioning with a force is the only word that's coming to my mind, but a presence, maybe a presence that is at clear and determined and no longer deluded by the facade of what that language, all that future language, was doing, and that in itself maybe is what will help in meeting those, acting out those intentions to meet those commitments. In other words, when there's no more confusion about what is real and what is facade and what is light room and what is dark room, then that in itself is what can call forth, that clarity itself is what can kind of pave the way for those commitments to just be met.
Yeah.
I'm not confused anymore.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. And a huge part of it is no judgment about not meeting them.
Yes, yeah. Because that would still just be part of the commitment, the structure, wouldn't it?
Yes, the failure part, structure.
Yeah, and then that's because that sets you up for, but in the future you will.
Yeah. 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 And that is the hardest part.
Yeah.
The
The non-judgment part is the hardest part?
The hardest part is not believing the judgment of failure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's really fun not to. I mean, it's just a whole kind of different. It's like I have new eyes.
Yeah. That whole orientation of failure is now being shown the light on, and it's just so much more fun to live in a different orientation. Thank you.
I found that conversation about relationships really, it shone some light on something, or it took me a little deeper on something. I had this interesting experience of, I had a common experience of sitting in judgment upon our various national politicians and things about who are in a big brouhaha about health insurance. And where I went was, what they're not seeing, what they're paying no attention to, is the actual human beings that are impacted one way or another. It's all just about the horse race and ego and vested interest and that kind of thing. So I was feeling pretty righteous about all that. And then I had this little incident that I think, but for practice, would have passed me right by. And that is, one of the cats was clawing a chair, and I very brusquely told the cat to stop it. Mm-hmm. And it was suggested to me that I was a little too brusque. And where I went immediately was to defensiveness about I was being criticized. Mm-hmm. And it took me quite a while to get to, I wonder what's good for the cat. Mm-hmm. And I got it. It's exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to my vested place. Mm-hmm. And that was what mattered, and that was what had to respond, and that was what was under attack, and that was, you know, mm-hmm. and lost track entirely in that moment mm-hmm. of what was being pointed to, and who, you know, who was the creature being affected. Mm-hmm. So it was just very helpful to see that, and so what I was relating to was, first of all, that it really is in relationships that we have such a powerful opportunity to see where we are so vested. Mm-hmm. I mean, the notion of where am I vested, I'm finding really helpful, because I've often used it as a criticism of other people. So what I was seeing was, so I'm vested in not being criticized. Mm-hmm. And then I'm also vested in being someone who's kind to cats. Mm-hmm. And I'm vested in being someone who knows what those other people ought to be doing. And it was just so helpful in that one incident to see all those ego-identified, ego-locked-in places.
Yeah.
And just get... I can sort of glide along for a while thinking I'm not very hooked.
Yeah.
And then, you know, an incident like that is such a gift, because, oh my God, I'm hooked here and here and here and here and here. And all I need to do is see it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to get hooked on, I shouldn't be hooked on.
Yeah, because then you're back again in
exactly.
the structure of it. And so when you see that, I'm projecting here that there was some compassion for this person who got hooked, and gratitude for the relationship, and gratitude for that it's all happening. Yeah, and then what does that do to the projections out?
I'm not sure yet, but one thing I certainly see is, oh my God, that is what we human beings are up against.
Yeah.
All of us.
Yeah.
All of us are
in our own little sphere, whether big or small.
Right, right. And it really brings home is the damage we do from that place.
Mm-hmm.
The damage we're capable of doing from that place. Now, I might have hurt my cat's feelings, but, you know, on a larger scale, God knows the damage we all do when we're vested in protecting this place. Mm-hmm. Above all else.
Yes, the damage to this.
And the trail of destruction I think we can create around us.
Yeah, yes. As Sherry put it recently, the irreparable damage we can do when
yes.
we're identified.
That's right, mm-hmm. yeah. So I was just very grateful for, you know, for practice which allows us to see those things and A, see them, and B, say, okay, I can go to a place of compassion around that.
Yes, and that's the B is what I was really focusing on, you know, kind of honing in on that, that it sounded like you so were able to go there, because there's a way to see those things, and then it gets looped right back into, oh, I shouldn't be doing that, I got to, you know, I got to work on this, I got to, you know, work
right.
on it.
Right.
Instead of just receiving the clarity and the, you
right.
know, insights and all that within compassion.
Because the idea of work on it is just another investment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it perpetuates, so that really is what we're up against.
Yeah.
That we are so fortunate to be steeped in something as simple as there is nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That is sort of like the trap door out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Justin.
That's really interesting in that relationship discussion too, especially the part about relationships becoming impersonal
mm-hmm.
with folks who, you know, I've known for a long time, my family. Because that's been happening for me too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been happening ever since I came here, but it's been accelerated, it feels like, in the last year or so. I think it's because of a change in my own relationship with that. Because that's always been a place of struggle for me. Even though, I mean, around here I have a reputation as someone who doesn't want to talk to other people in particular, which is true. But I also have in me a real desire to connect and also a belief in, you know, me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a personal me. And so I've struggled with getting to a place where I really don't want a personal relationship with life. I've had this continual feeling that I kind of do, actually. And over the past while, I feel like that's been kind of dropping away, and I'm more and more losing interest in that, and it's really affecting my relationships with people outside of here, because there's an expectation that they will be personal.
Mm. So as you've seen over the years, this lack and this loss of a desire for a personal relationship with life, it's kind of bled over into your relationships with family or other kind of past personal relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's really challenging, because that is how people relate,
mm-hmm.
Typically.
Yeah.
And, you know, to change the rules like that on somebody is difficult for people. At least that's my projection. It's difficult,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking for skillful means in that. What I wish could happen is, of course, I wish that we could get together and just enjoy each other's goodness,
mm-hmm.
as a way of speaking of it,
mm-hmm.
And rather than meeting and connecting on that level. Like, I feel like I feel connected with Sangha on that level,
mm-hmm.
Without even interacting with people,
mm-hmm.
and it's good. I feel relaxed, and I feel trusted. I feel trusting. But what I see happening instead is people. I mean, who knows what's going on? I can only project. But like, I'm thinking of this dynamic goes on with two of my family members, where they get together and then one of them says something, the other one disagrees. And then they bicker about that a little while. And then they kind of spin that, they wear out that topic.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody will say something, and then the other person will disagree, and then they'll argue about that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And that can go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of times I've said, gosh, this is tedious.
Out loud, you said it out loud.
Yeah, you know, and or call it something like bickering, and they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
They don't experience like that at all.
Yeah.
You know, they're connecting to each other.
Yeah.
But I just can't stand it. I just, ugh.
Yeah. Is that, not being able to stand it, is that the personal relationship that you would like to let go of?
I don't know.
What I'm wondering is, if I can't stand it, weren't there, would that be the relationship you're more going for? I don't know.
Would that be the relationship?
Like, you're there, these two guys, people do this, and you're just there, kind of, you know, they're just there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I have the place I go karmically is, oh boy, I'm just not going to deal with that.
Uh-huh.
Which is sort of a twin, it's not what you're talking about, but it's kind of a twin of that. But you know, what I look at is, you know, how to continue to be engaged.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know, I'm not sure about that, because a part of me says, it doesn't feel like it's a requirement. Well, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
not sure.
Yeah. So but where it leaves you is just really kind of looking at this whole how to be with that, with mm-hmm. in your relationships, and how, I guess, and I'm projecting here, including that, not being able to stand it when that happens.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of just threw that in at the end of that sentence. I don't know if that's...
That's not a major...
Let me see if that's where I really come from. Yeah, I think so. I think sometimes. I think more is just well, it's kind of like I have no idea what was actually being talked about. What I was hearing is there was something in that conversation with Swinney earlier about sort of a legitimate preference or a legitimate point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, gosh, I mean, I feel like, I truly don't know, but I feel like in my heart, I'm just not interested in being in a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like there's a draw in those kind of relationships to being yeah. in a personal relationship. Mm-hmm. And I feel like maybe this is what it is. I don't feel like I know really how to have an impersonal relationship in the middle of that situation a lot of times without going to kind of my karmic place, which is just to be not engaged with it.
Yeah, yeah. So that's an interesting place to be, isn't it? So how do I have an impersonal relationship in this situation that is, you know, conditionally personal
mm-hmm.
without going to the karmic pool?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I just had an experience recently of being with somebody again, I can't really know what's going on with that person, but I can project that I see a pattern of sabotage where there's, I actually see it in everybody, it's just, in myself too, but how people in conditioning, you know, you say you want something, you know, like to mm-hmm. say to be loved or something, and then everything you do is in opposition to that,
mm-hmm.
and it keeps producing the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like with this one person, I just see it across the board, and I don't project there's any awareness at all that that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like in that, that was an interesting situation because it felt like there was a compassion that was there. I feel powerless to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any interest in that. For that to be changed,
mm-hmm.
there's clearly no interest in another point of view, because if I ever say the same thing, it's immediately bypassed or dismissed or something like that. So, and that's kind of nice actually, because it really takes the pressure off. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's not a darn thing I can do about this.
Yeah.
But it does allow me a place of, like a soft sort of place of being with that person. You know, being aware, it's aware of myself, you know, it's just a series of projections, but being aware of the suffering that feels like it's there from a soft, sort of gentle place of compassion.
Yeah.
So maybe that would be an example of one way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, and that seems like a really, let's see what the words would be, that seems like a really helpful way to be impersonally in a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm. You know, I just finished saying that is the places where it's challenging is where there's an expectation that I'm being personal.
Yeah.
Because in that relationship, not so much. I mean, that person, I mean, clearly knows I'm there in the room
uh-huh.
with them,
uh-huh.
but that's not the end of
that's
our relationship. But like
yeah.
with the another person I'm thinking of, there's a direct expectation that I'm engaged in this personal level, and if I don't, then that's complained about. And yeah, then it really gets challenging because
yeah.
you know, how do we negotiate this where I used to try to play this game where I sort of pretend,
uh-huh.
but that's not very satisfying, you know, and it's not authentic either.
Yeah.
And yeah, so maybe that's just the next place to work on it.
Yeah, that's really, yeah. And because that expectation or that, you know, kind of there's a request or even a requirement that you be in a personal relationship
mm-hmm.
that really in your heart you're no longer interested in maintaining those kinds of relationships.
No, I mean, I wouldn't mind actually. I mean, there's a funny kind of personal, like when people get together and they chit-chat is
mm-hmm.
what they do. And actually, I mean, that's kind of, I don't mind that at all. Mm-hmm. It just, if that's, because you got to do something while you're together, and generally it's talking for most people. And there's nothing to talk about because people aren't interested in talking about the kind of things we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay, well, that's just the avenue for the connection to happen. Mm-hmm. But what happens is it's all loaded with this stuff, like all these expectations, and, you know, there's these, like in this one relationship, there's, you know, there's these power dynamics where that, like, the person feels like they have a right to offer me advice all the time about things, and, you know, and then, yeah, so it gets really, it gets sticky in there of how to communicate what it is that I want without that becoming personal in this completely other way and then getting all tangled up in all these
things. Yeah, well, that does, it is sticky. Mm-hmm. You know, of how to stay in that authentic place when it sounds like they're doing, when, you know, I predict anyway, there's two really very different desires here, you know, different of how to be together.
Yeah, and just completely different worldviews.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because I know, you know, I look at that person and say, boy, that person is clueless. You know, they have no idea how things work. And I know they're looking at me and saying, boy, that person is clueless. Just have no idea what life is all about. And, you know, it's like we're living on these two planets.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, really. And because it's like a family, if it wasn't family, then I would just never be with that. I would never choose to be with that person.
Yeah.
But because it's family, then it's a requirement to do that, pretty much, unless I want to do something really radical. And so there's these two worlds, and, you know, how can... I would like for us to find a place where we can communicate, and where we can actually be together, even if we're completely different and live in two different worlds.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's an interest in that on the other side or not. Uh-huh. And I mean, that's not even, might not even be legitimate in myself. Maybe I just say that. But yeah, anyway, I'm hoping to find skillful means in that.
Yeah, hoping to find skillful means that where two people with very different worldviews but are in a relationship can be together in a way that's mutually satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. Cameron.
Yeah, something's been happening in my life that it almost feels the way I described it's been happening. It's not like I've been directing it, and yet it feels as I look at it that life is directing it and that I am being willing to go with life, which is kind of very nice thing to become conscious of, because this was happening and I wasn't really, you know, seeing it. But I spoke about it a little bit yesterday, but I've seen some, as a workshop on phone, but I've seen some things since then, so I thought I would speak it out and, you know, see if any input comes in that would be helpful or whatever. What's happening is that there's just a lot of change being offered. And I've been saying, okay, do it, you know. In ways that in prior times, I might not have. I might have said, no, I don't want to do this because I'm comfortable where I am. And so it's been a lot of things in a row that change the tools and the things that I use daily to kind of organize my life. And so the first thing was I got an iPhone, and it took me, I was learning how to use it and all the things it could do and everything, and then suddenly they have an upgrade to the operating system, and I'm like, oh no, I'm just barely getting a hold of this one, you know. But I did it, and I hated it. I hated the way it looked. I thought it was so much prettier before. Now I think it's ugly, and I really like things to be aesthetically pleasing. So that kind of prejudiced me, you know, but I just kind of kept stepping on, you know, and I got the new, something that had been really making me feel like I wasn't using my recording and listening to the best ability, is that it was just all disorganized. I didn't know I would just everything was just hundreds of recordings with no way to access anything when I needed something reassuring. I mean, mm-hmm. I had to go through. Anyway, so I got the new app, and I've got all these little, so I got that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, not too long after upgrading the operating system to the phone, came an upgrade to the computer operating system. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, I did that too. So that the phone and the computer could talk to each other, and that the calendar, I could change it here and it would be changed there. So there's some other things too. I keep forgetting when I go starting to talk about this because there's been a lot of it. But what I'm feeling like is that not having things organized before was a way of maintaining an identity as a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Because things were not working. Things were hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I it was everything, you know, was just hard.
Yeah.
And so seeing these things, seeing the willingness to do these things, and seeing, well, the other thing was yesterday, seeing how having a menu and a shopping list to go with the menu and getting my food part of my life organized, I just felt what that would do too.
Uh-huh.
Just put me in a position of being responsible for what I'm putting in my body, you know, instead of being like a little grazing herd animal in the kitchen, you know, to find what I can eat. Which, you know, sounds funny, but it's kind of exactly what I was doing, you know. And so what it seems like is that for the longest time, I was locked in that victim place, in that kind of a child place. And all the practicing that's been happening has brought me to a place where I'm ready and willing and want to take responsibility. And then all of these ways of making things work better have just kind of come in.
Uh-huh.
Like life just sent those to me.
Yeah.
And to give myself credit, I said yes and uh-huh. did them.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling this kind of stand up taller kind of feeling inside mm-hmm. myself. And yes, I can take responsibility for having things work instead of being victim.
Yeah.
And it's just like happening, you know, though. Yeah. It's not like I said, well, I'm going to get a hold of all these things and make them work because they're not working.
Yeah.
I kind of didn't even know they weren't working, you know.
Yeah, yeah. There was nothing like, no one stepped up to make it happen. Life just sort of made it happen, and you're participating in that.
Yeah, but I think it came from the intention, from the intention that has come out of the practice of mm-hmm. trusting, wanting to be present,
showing up,
of wanting to live from a place of love
yeah.
and strength and confidence. And so out of that, life could see, I think,
that you're okay. ready for an upgrade.
I'm ready for an upgrade. Everyone's life is ready for a full upgrade. In fact, it's overdue.
You're ready for an upgrade in your food and everything, and your and your technology, and your recording and listening, and everything. You're really ready for that next level.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so it's kind of a combination between doing what was necessary to be ready for it, and then just kind of accepting the gifts that life has provided for. As a result of that.
Yes, training up and then reaping the benefits.
Yes.
It sounds like with what you're describing.
Summarized succinctly.
And congratulations. I mean, that's a fun place to be, isn't it?
It really is, and it's just the, I was actually recording. I was going to do something new that I had never done before just last week, and I was kind of nervous about it, you know, and feeling kind of that more of a childlike place, you know, and had a dialogue with my mentor on the recording. And as that was going on, I felt this thing rise in me that felt like adequacy.
Uh-huh.
the person I'm going to be related to is adequate, and I'm adequate. And together, that adequacy will manifest in something that works. And it was just like this whole new orientation that was just coming out of that recording. And it was almost like I just kind of glimpsed it, but I felt it.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of thing that's happening right now with all of this. It's like something new is birthing, and I'm sensing it, and I'm catching it out of the corner of my eye, and I'm getting excited, and then boom, back into the fear, and you know, like that. And then it's kind of that, you know.
And as that grows, it'll be more and more something you can trust will be there.
Yeah.
You can believe them.
Yeah, and that's been my conscious practice for like 3 years now, is trust, because that was a real empty tank in this being, yeah. So it's very exciting and a little scary too, but it's scary in an exciting way.
Yeah, I feel the excitement. Yeah. That's very good.
Yeah.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to, the relationship conversation spoke to me this morning, and because I'm about to see a family member as well, and the thing about the time is going to be so short, just really, and what arose for me about that is the concept of unlimited access, and that that there is. I'm seeing like there's an unexamined belief, like, and I think the parent-child relationship, that there should be kind of this unlimited access.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if there's not, then it's not. There's something amiss.
Yeah.
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 And seeing. That, you know, despite the parent-child relationship, our relationships, I think for a lot of my life I was trying to find a way to put the kibosh on the unlimited access thing.
Draw some boundaries,
yeah,
as we call
exactly, them. Exactly, get some boundaries in place. And, you know, I think part of that just comes from being, you know, possibly female and, you know, and my particular orientation to life and feeling like I need to be there for everybody at all times.
Deeply conditioned in a lot of females, right?
Deeply conditioned. And I say, I'm not too sure where I'm going with this, but something I've been reading about the adjective is escaping right now. But to think or to be in this place of I wish I could come up with it. But that this is my life somehow, and that somehow I've been given that it's mine to do whatever I want with it. It's just not serving the heart. It's like to be in that kind of relationship and not to be in service to all of life, like to be in that place of what's best for all. Now I can tell.
So you were talking about the having, you know, unlimited access, people having unlimited access to you, I think is what you're pointing out, right? And so a lot of your life was about setting up where that wouldn't be able to happen. And so that there would be some, you know, boundaries or whatever. And then what you were talking about is having this concept of this is my life to do with whatever I want,
right,
doesn't seem to be the best response or way to serve all of life. Mm-hmm. That there's another way that's really what's best for all. Mm-hmm. That is what you're looking at?
Yeah, exploring. And best for all is just expands to all life.
Yeah, all of life.
All of life.
Yes, not just these relationships, not just what this person wants,
right,
or what that, yeah.
Not just even to those people.
Right.
You know,
right,
to what anything that I interact with,
yeah,
in my day-to-day life. And
inanimate or animate.
Yes, exactly. And anyway, that's okay. I feel like I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but that's fine. And you know, so what's been going on for me lately too is that so it's this place of I guess, you know, looking at what's projected out there, learning to look at those places that are still needing acceptance, mm-hmm, within myself.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the relationship with my daughter, just seeing that there's a whole lot that's, like, unacceptable, you know, that I just, this is not the way it's supposed to look.
Uh-huh. In the relationship.
Yeah, well, in her life.
In her life, okay.
This is,
yeah.
You know, this is the way, if you want a happy life, this is the direction, uh-huh, you need to go in, and you're not.
You're not on the good trajectory there, honey.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. The world according to mom.
Yeah.
This is not going in a good direction.
Yeah. And it sounds like you're looking at a way of accepting that.
Yeah.
Without having to do something about it, or
exactly,
judge it, or
right,
any of that.
And maybe that it's not my life, and her life is not my life either.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And to practice being in that place of life doesn't make mistakes.
Yeah. Everybody's on their own path.
And everybody's on their own path.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's interesting too, what has been arising for me too is a lot that impersonal nature, like just approaching it from this is a person. You know, it's not my
yes.
You know,
my
daughter.
Yeah.
You know, my possession. It's a person, and in fact I am feeling less and less of that kind of relationship.
Yeah.
You know?
Having that impersonal quality to a very personal relationship.
Yeah.
And exploring what kind of peace or what kind of well-being can be as a result of that attitude of mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just seeing like what it would be just to show up and to just see, to be with what is.
Yeah.
You know, not the tension of trying to, like.
Including that, including the karma to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Just watching it all. And I just was appreciated being reminded of improv, the lessons for
mm-hmm,
stage directions.
Yeah, yes, they are.
You know, so useful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so useful in all encounters, but especially, you know.
Yeah.
I can be very
those
useful,
charged ones.
Yeah, useful in this situation. So I'll remember yes and.
And enjoy the ride.
Yeah. And, to just be with whatever arises and have fun with it and to play with it.
Mm-hmm.
And to not be in that place of getting caught up in the seriousness of it that, you know.
Yeah. That has ego written all over it.
Exactly.
It? Yeah.
Exactly. But that has to do with a short period of time and all and
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just play with,
just to play with it.
So anyway.
Thank you.